Body, Mind, Spirit Radio, your live connection to the information for a healthy body, an enlightened mind, and a renewed spirit.
Hello and welcome to today's inspiration. I am Lisa Berry and I'm here to uplift you and share love and laughter and talk about how to get through life with the proper perspective and make it as positive as possible. I've been a Detroit area radio broadcaster for many years, and I'm so happy to have this opportunity to connect with you here on Body, Mind, Spirit, and so grateful you're listening to us live or you found us on the Body, Mind, Spirit radio website, where you can listen at your leisure, anywhere, anytime, in the car, on your phone. That's how high-tech our world has become. But this show is all about connection, connecting with ourselves, connecting with each other, and connecting with experts who can help us awaken ourselves and learn new things. I recently connected via Twitter, believe it or not, with an uplifting, inspiring teacher who has agreed to join us for the show this morning. He's an author, a speaker, a coach, and a purveyor of positiveness like me. I want to say welcome to Dr. Joey Fawcett. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Lisa. I'm a purveyor of positivity. I like alliteration. That's pretty cool. Thanks.
Well, I often give a talk called Powering Through as Positive as Possible, and I just have chosen that's how I'm going to look at life. And you have a book called Work Positive in a Negative World, Redefine Your Reality and Achieve Your Business Dreams. You encourage readers to step away from the negative shadows cast by the world's clouds and discover a positive reality, which gives us a lot to talk about, and I'm really looking forward to that. But let's start at the beginning. Have you always been a positive person? Were you born that way, or is that something you had to work on?
Wow. Well, you've asked a philosophical question, maybe without needing to, but without meaning to, but I'll tell you out of my story. I'm not so sure anybody is born positive. I think it's a choice we make daily, sometimes hourly, sometimes minute by minute, depending on what life's throwing at us, right? So was I born positive? Probably not. If you go to our website at listentolife.org, listentolife.org, you'll see a thing in the nav button, a little thing to click on there, and there's a video about me, who is Dr. Joey. So in there I tell the story about when I was a kid, probably around 9 years old in third grade. Like most third grade little boys, I decided to be an entrepreneur during the summer. In other words, I borrowed my dad's lawnmower and started mowing neighbors' lawns. Who can resist a little 9-year-old kid with a lawnmower?
Right. Yeah.
Oh, of course, honey. Right. You could have. Well, I discovered after mowing a few lawns, Lisa, that I was allergic to mowing grass. And so I knew I had allergies, but I didn't know it was that bad. And I guess my desire to earn money overtook my common sense. And so got a viral infection in my lungs, wound up in Duke University Hospital. I remember the doctors coming in overnight and saying to my mother, pray, because we're not sure he's going to make it through the night. And that's hard to hear at any age, but when you're a 9-year-old kid trying to figure out the world, you know. So I remember her looking through that mist tent and reaching up under there and taking my hand. And I'm coughing my lungs out. And she looks me in the eye and says, I am positive you will make it through the night. And that riveted my attention, not only in that moment, but 45 years later. I chose in that moment to be positive. And I woke up the next morning and I was still there. The doctors were wrong at that time. And so then I came back home and began to sell Christmas cards door-to-door in the summer.
In the summer.
Made my money anyway.
So yay.
I discovered the power of positivity and that you really can, as I like to say, hang in there like an old rusty fish hook. So,
well, I give your mother credit, too.
Daily.
Yeah, your mom inspired you, right? Being the mother of two sons who I try to inspire, of course, I love that story.
Yeah, and, well, I've got two daughters and, of course, tried to pass it on to them. And it's and in fact, I told that very story in a church setting on Mother's Day. And, wow, I got choked up, and I've told that story a million times. So, we get a lot from our parents, I think, in terms of positivity. So are we born into it? I don't think so. Is it a choice we make daily? Yes. Do we learn to make that choice? Yes. I think home is one place where we can learn it.
Yeah, so I think as parents, that's one of our primary things that we can pass along to our kids. Now, you have come up with five core practices of a work positive lifestyle. I love these. Perceive, conceive, believe, achieve. How did you come up with that? And tell us a little bit about them.
Well, I've been a professional speaker for a number of years. And back when the Great Recession started, as the pundits called it, I was home more. And my wife looked at me one day and wanted to know when I was going to travel next. And so I said, geez, you know, that's right, because all the so many speaking engagements are canceled at that time. That giant sucking sound, you know, that was my bank account with no speaking engagements in it. So I said, okay, the pundits are calling this a Great Recession, reminded me of the Great Depression, which I had grown up hearing my grandparents talk about. And I said, well, surely somebody did something that was remarkable during the Great Depression, because we're all still here. We're all making a living. It may not be as much as we once made, but, you know, we're all doing pretty well, and especially in this country. And so I began doing research, and I found this guy in 1936 published a book, and he was teaching public classes on speaking at the YMCA in New York City, and he went ahead and published this book, even though who had the money to buy a book during the Great Depression, right? So in 36, this book became the number two bestseller in the country at that time, spawned an industry, I think, in training and development, and the company still exists today that's named after him. And they did about $30 million worth of business around the world last year. The book was How to Win Friends and Influence People. And, of course, Dale Carnegie was the
author. I knew that's what you were
going to
say.
What an incredible story. So my question, Lisa, was what did Dale Carnegie do that other people didn't do? What were his core practices? What were his daily habits? And so I began to look at him, and I said, well, maybe Dale Carnegie was a freak, and I need to look around for some more folks. So I went to Corbin, Kentucky, and I found a guy up there who at age 66 had been divorced once because his wife said he couldn't keep a job. And so at 66, he found himself filing bankruptcy, and all he had left was a station wagon, some chicken legs and thighs, and 11 secret herbs and spices. So Harlan Sanders hit the trail in that station wagon, began teaching people how to fry chicken his way. And the rest is gastronomic history, shall we say.
Yeah. And how old was Colonel Sanders when he made this big change in profit in his life? 60-something, did you say?
He was 66, which back 66. In the 30s was – that was old, you know.
Yeah.
So maybe Sanders and Carnegie were freaks, so I said, I need at least one more. Went to California, found a couple of guys who were Stanford grads making little electric motors. Well, electricity was just nouveau then, and who's going to buy an electric motor when electricity is one bare light bulb in a room, you know, and people still using wood cookstoves. Anyway, they wound up selling more than a few of them. In 39, they incorporated, didn't know what to call the company at first. We'll use our first names, Bill and Dave. That didn't work out, they didn't think. So they used their last names, Hewlett and Packard. And so HP was born in a Palo Alto, California garage. And I think a few people had bought electric motors since then from them.
Yeah,
all sorts
a few.
Of things like inkjet printers and all. So what did Bill and Dave, what did Harlan, what did Dale Carnegie do to create these remarkable businesses in the midst of the worst economic history of our country? And that's when I discovered the five core practices, and I began investing those into my own business. I began writing about them. I discovered that they worked for me today in the midst of the Great Recession. And then Entrepreneur Magazine noticed some of the writing, and we talked, and that's when Work Positive in a Negative World became a reality. And it hit number one on Amazon three times in three different categories. So it's been a real blessing to me, but it's blessed lots of people, because we then were able to develop coaching programs. People began asking for more information about these five core practices. So 7 weeks to Work Positive and the Work Positive Master Coaching Program were born. And it really helps people to be able to focus on the positive and filter out the negative, and then follow that up with actionable steps that they can do that make a real difference for themselves at work.
How do you filter out the negative?
Wow, that's a great question. Again, we're back to choice. You filter out the negative by focusing on the positive. If you want to think about your mental energy, which is the perceived core practice, if you want to think about your mental energy, your thoughts, as something that you give. Okay, I think attention is your most valuable resource, and so you're okay. giving it to different things. Okay, are you going to give it to the positive in the situation or to the negative? So I don't deny, and I don't think Carnegie or Sanders or Hewlett and Packard ever denied the reality of negativity. I mean, bad things happen in the world. The economy has its ups and downs. Those things happen, so it's not some kind of evil doesn't exist or negativity doesn't exist type mentality. It's, okay, that didn't turn out the way I thought it was, but let me see where's the opportunity, as Dr. Peel used to talk about. Adversity contains within it the seeds of opportunity. So where's the opportunity in the midst of this adversity? So you persevere through the negativity, but you just stop it at a certain point and say, I'm not going to give my attention to that. I'm going to pay attention to this positivity over here, and here's the opportunity, and that's where I'm going to accelerate and move through. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I find it very frustrating that I feel like some people just don't want to be happy. And I know that you can't change other people. Change has to come when they want it to come. But do you find that some people just don't want to be happy?
I do. And we're talking about the second core practice now, which is the social dynamic of a work positive lifestyle, and that's conceive. When you conceive, there's at least two of you together. So in business, you're talking about your customers or clients, you're talking about your teammates, you're talking about your supplier or vendor, and these are the people you're talking about. Some of them just don't want to be happy. And I love those people. I've sold a lot of copies of my book because of those people.
Yeah, okay.
We all have them in our lives. They're in our families. They're at work. You know, I created a pet nickname for these people, Lisa. I refer to these people who don't want to be happy, these people who thrive on negativity, as Eeyore vampires.
Oh, I love it. Yeah. I love it.
Why do I call them Eeyore vampires? Well, you remember Eeyore from Winnie the Pooh.
Oh, of course, sure.
He was, yeah, always the one who said, it'll never work. Okay?
Right.
But, and so if they were just cute little cuddly plush critters we could leave at work, that would be really cool, right? Because we could lock the door on them, walk away, and go back home and have a good night. Not so much, because when the sun goes down, those Eeyores morph into vampires. And they will suck your time, energy, and attention away from your family, your friends, and those people that you choose to be with each and every day. I mean, you're with your spouse at a nice dinner, and what's playing in the back of your head? You know, there's Eeyore morphed into a vampire. Right. And so focusing in that moment is just not working for you. Or if you got small children or grandchildren, you're in the floor playing with them, where does your mind wander to? So it's really important to learn to, as Dr. Henry Cloud talks about, set boundaries with these Eeyore vampires. And in the book and in our coaching programs, we teach people how to do that.
How to set boundaries. You know, people have lately, I keep getting the message, you just get rid of all the negative people in your life and surround yourself with only positive, uplifting people. And sometimes I feel like I would be alone if I did that. Is that something that you recommend? Is that something you think is achievable?
There's always going to be a negative person.
Get rid of the Eeyores and the vampires?
Sorry. There's always going to be an Eeyore vampire out there. I mean, they circle.
Right.
They're looking for an opportunity to bring you over to their dark side. But I also know the reality of what Jim Rohn used to talk about, who's my favorite business philosopher. He used to talk about how you're the average of the five persons with whom you spend the most time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think what happens is, if you can think about it as concentric circles, Lisa, they're those five people who get the most of your time, energy, and attention. And you know that you're going to be the average of those. So what you want to look at is, if you think about it from a Facebook perspective, you know, who are your top five friends? Or if you want to think about it like from your smartphone's perspective, who's in your contact database, in your favorites? Who are those five people? Well, those are the folks that you want to give your most time, energy, and attention. And those are going to be the five most positive people you can possibly surround yourself with. Those are the people that you take their call first, you return their email or text first, or their Google message or whatever, however you interact with them. Those are the people who get your primary time and attention. Those are the priority relationships that you have. And if you go out from there, it's going to be a larger group of people, and it's almost like a diminishing amount of positivity so that you can tolerate some of those ER vampires in your circles of influence. But the people who are closest to you and get your primary attention, remember, attention is a resource, and so you want to invest that in the most positive ways possible, and in the people who feed back to you positivity. So you just want to see it as a scarce resource and make sure that you're seeding into and investing in those relationships that provide the most for you.
Good advice. We're talking to Dr. Joey Fawcett, who has developed the five core practices. And well, let's go back to number one, which is perceive, because I think okay. that perception is everything. I always say it's amazing yeah. that any of us get along or anything happens in this world because we are – I do believe that we are all one and united, but we all see things so differently. And so tell us more about number one, perception or perceive in your five core practices. What
does
that mean?
This is where you really focus on. Yeah, it's focus on the positive and filter out the negative. That's the mantra of the perceive core practice. You choose to spend your mental energy on those positive things. And you're absolutely right. It's all in your head. That's where it really starts.
Everything starts. I mean, I do a lot of meditating, and I follow a lot of people, including sure. Dr. Joey on Twitter. That's how I found out about you. And the message I receive a lot is that it all comes from within. Everything comes from within. It's all up to you to decide how to be, how to feel, what to see, and it comes from within. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah, and it's a choice. That's why the title of this book blows so many people away when it's work positive in a negative world. We get two reactions. Wow, yeah, the world is negative, and ooh, how do I work positive in it? What happens is we see ourselves, I think, we perceive of ourselves as maybe like in a life raft, adrift on an ocean of negativity, and so the waves swamp us and the currents carry us where we want to go. But exactly the opposite's true. We're swimming in an ocean of positivity, and it's all around us. We just have to choose to see it that way, to perceive it that way, and to embrace those mental thoughts that are positive. Now, the world is negative again. This is not some Pollyanna type of approach. The world is negative. We live in a less than perfect world, okay? But it's up to me to establish my mental paradigm, my mental mindset, my mental construct for how I'm going to see other people. For instance, we're back to those ER vampires. What if I take on that ER vampire's anxiety and I get all angry because she's angry, okay? And maybe she's angry with me, and so I fire back words of anger at her. What if I flip that mentally and said, I wonder what's going on with her today that's causing her to take her anger out on me? You know, did the dog pee on her favorite pair of shoes that matches that outfit and she couldn't wear them today, you know? Or did she and her husband have a spat? Maybe she got a speeding ticket on the way to work. You know, what's going on here with her? Steve Covey used to talk about it, whom I just absolutely adored. He used to talk about it as seek first to understand, then to be understood. And I think if we'll perceive our conceive relationships in that way, and just give other people a break while being a good steward of our time, energy, and attention, especially attention, then it just works a lot better for us.
But that would mean thinking of other people. And, you know, the thing about the name of and I don't see that happening a lot. And I almost think this intense social media is making it worse. It seems like I have observed if somebody achieves something, the minute you get to the top, there are – hundreds, if not thousands of people can't wait to knock you down. It just seems to be the pattern in our society right now, and it happens on a lot of websites when people can anonymously post nasty comments and, you know, no one knows who they really are. I just see, and I am like you, I try to focus on the positive as much as possible, but it just seems like the world is getting more negative, and that's why I did think it was interesting that you put that in the title of your book about it being
a
negative world.
Oh, I agree with you so much. It's easier to spew negativity today than it ever has been.
Right.
Which is a part of the Perceive Core practice, and in our 7 weeks to work positive coaching program, we help you do this. I'm trying to lead a movement called the Great Media Switch, where instead of push media, we use pull media. And what do I mean by that? Push media is media, well, say, for instance, television and well, a lot of radio, too, over-the-air radio, okay? You
right.
really give up your editorial license to whoever is broadcasting at you, and they're pushing on you their editorial content, their viewpoint of the world. And what we have to realize is their basic mantra is, if it bleeds, it leads.
Mm-hmm.
So the more negativity there is, and they're in business to monetize negativity, don't fool yourself for a second. They highlight negativity. It's the way they interpret the world. So you're really giving up your editorial license when you allow push media to take over your life. And so many of us get up first thing in the morning, grab the remote control, turn that TV on.
Right.
Boom.
Well, that's why I'm doing the show, because
you?
I have, yeah, I've worked in commercial radio for a long time, and I have lived, I have seen shows fake things just to make controversy,
oh, yeah.
and people I don't understand it. That's why I want to do this show, and that's why I want to talk to people like you and bring attention to the positive things in the world, because there is so much negative media out there. Now, tell me the name of your movement again.
Yeah, I'm calling it the Great Media Switch. That's what I'm calling it.
The Great Media
Switch. That's right. We're moving from push media to pull media. Now, what's pull media? Well, this show is pull media. Your listeners right now are choosing either to listen live or to the recorded program. It's like most BTR stuff. This will be uploaded later, and people can access it at their convenience. And they can do that on their smartphone, their tablet, laptop, however they want to. Apps rule the world right now and are taking over. Well, I can choose whichever app I want to. And so I can choose to scan headlines. I can choose to listen to whatever I want to. So I have taken back over the editorial license to my mental state, because I can choose to listen to today's inspiration on Body, Mind, Spirit Radio. I can choose to listen to whatever I want to or to read whatever I want to. And that's empowering. There's the choice. So that's why I call it pull media. And that's why I want to leave.
Hallelujah. I love that. I love that. That is exactly what we need. So while all these commercial corporate-owned radio companies are monetizing negativity, how do we monetize positivity? That's what I'm working on right now. is there a world for that? Can that happen?
Oh, it is happening. How did my book get to be number one in three categories on Amazon? And look, I don't live in New York City like Dale Carnegie did when he published How to Win Friends and Influence People. I mean, I live on the backside of nowhere in a rather obscure part of the world. Okay, but this great media now, the pull media, allows you to do things like what you're doing here on Block Talk Radio with today's inspiration, and you just keep pushing that message out. How did you and I meet? We met through Twitter. I get this tweet. You guys might believe this if you know Lisa, but I get this tweet, and the opening sentence on this tweet, my social media people said, you got to read this. The opening line is something about, I want to do business with you. And I'm like, well, okay.
Well, you put out a tweet that said,
you
put out a tweet that said something like, if you want to do business, reach out and do business. I'm like, I want to do business with you. So I tweeted you back.
Ah,
and
there you go.
It was wonderful.
And we didn't know each other.
No, and that is how it's all changing. And people who want to be part of this positive media switch, which I definitely do need to embrace that, because it's so important. If you would like have a question or a comment for Dr. Fawcett, you can call us at 646-378-0378. We are live right now on Wednesday morning, but if you're listening later, you can email me at lisalovesbarry, B-A-R-R-Y, at gmail.com. You want to throw out an email address? Dr. Fawcett,
Sure. It's Dr. Joey. Sure. Dr. Joey, D-R-J-O-E-Y, at listentolife.org. That's Dr. Joey at listentolife, L-I-F-E.org.
And we will do that again later for sure, but I'm assuming you are open for speaking engagements or coaching and other opportunities?
Yeah, we do all that. Run around the country speaking to business groups, corporate groups, other types of groups as well, associations and what have you, primarily focusing on business professionals, but also love to come to groups of people who mm-hmm. are just interested in positivity. And I'm not one of those, you know, fly in, do my gig and leave kind of speakers. I hang around. I'm there before the engagement to talk to you and get to know you. I'm there after the engagement. I'll sit on the sofa in the hallway and do coaching right there on the moment. So
go shoe shopping or something.
I've got a wife and two daughters, so yeah, I've done that, but I probably wouldn't choose to do that with somebody else.
No, I'm curious about the name of your website and your email. Listen to Life. Where did that come from?
Yeah, that came from I had a syndicated radio show on over the air, the Push Media, for years. It started in 1999. In fact, it was a short form show. And what I discovered was people absolutely love stories, and they love hearing stories about life and what's going on in life. And most people think, you know, for instance, I promise you there are people listening to us today who desperately want to be positive, but they're thinking, oh, I could never do that. So I named the short-form radio show, and therefore subsequently later the website, Listen to Life, because I'm convinced most of us contribute to the negative noise more than just stopping for a moment and listening to life. And I just know life is pregnant with opportunities for us to gain positivity and to really find some meaning, some purpose, satisfaction, and peace, all that good stuff in life, if we'll just slow down long enough to listen to it. So it really worked for me one day, and the name of the company was born when our older daughter, who's now in her 20s and a social media senior manager for social media for the Cartoon Network in Atlanta. So, but when she was a little girl, I mean like 2 years old, I was sitting in my favorite recliner doing what dads do a lot, you know, looking at the box scores in the sports section of the local paper. And she walked up on the other side of my paper and said, "Daddy, I want to tell you something." And I said, "Okay, honey, go ahead." And I didn't put the paper down. You know, really attentive father, right? And, "Daddy, I want to tell you something." And I'm sure, even though I couldn't see her, she had her hands on her hips because it's just a genetic thing with little girls, you know. And I said, right. I said, "Go ahead, honey." And then she drew back her hand. And all this is unbeknownst to me because I'm behind the paper, right, Lisa? She drew back her hand and she smashed my newspaper. And, of course, I lurched forward in the recliner, which put me on an eye level with her. And 2 years old looked me in the eye and said, "Listen to me with your eyes."
Ooh.
And I just went, whoa. Okay, so that was one of those transformative experiences for me. So
right.
In that moment, my spirit took a decided turn towards the better. And, wow, that was a long time ago, but it's still very powerful for me to tell that story. I started listening to life at that moment, and away we went. So.
With your eyes and your ears, I've, through my commercial radio broadcasting, have had the opportunity to work with and talk to a parenting expert. And really, I think and you have mentioned this already about attention being the number one gift you can mm-hmm. give to others. All your kids want is your attention. And I think it's getting worse because you see parents, they'll be out and they're on their cell phones and their focus is not believe me, I worked morning drive radio and I raised two kids, and it was a long day that started at 3 or 4 a.m. and went till 9 o'clock at night, pretty much nonstop. And when my kids were younger, we didn't have Twitter or Facebook, so it was a long day. I understand being a parent is one of the most difficult, grueling jobs you can have. It's also one of the most beneficial. And I'm at the point now, like, people say, "Well, I have to go to my kids' band concert." I'm thinking, you don't have to. You get to, because it only lasts for so long, and then they're moved on. And by the time you're ready to give them the attention they want, they're done with you. You know, so I feel mm-hmm. strongly about having parents of younger people realize that, you know, there's a time limit on this, and they're not going to want you to lay down with them at night. You know, my son's 18, and he doesn't like me to ask him to lay down with me at night. Because it wouldn't be right. But
Mom, that's weird.
Yeah. I was like, please, no. Okay, so, you know, you don't you don't get it at the time, but there is a time limit on parenting and how much they're going to try to suck you dry. And they do want your attention. And when you – is that a key to business? Mm. I have not really experienced a lot of business coaching, but I'm thinking that that is one of your main keys when you do business coaching about dealing with clients and attention.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. By the way, one of my wife's pet peeves is when we go out to eat, sometimes there'll be a family of four sitting at a table in the dining room, and all of them will be on their phones, no interaction with each other whatsoever.
Right.
And
you
so
see,
we really value that.
Right. And you see people who go out and prop the kid up with a DVD player, and they're not learning to socialize. They're out of the mom and dad's hair. And again, I try not to judge because I understand. It is overwhelming and exhausting. But ultimately,
yeah.
You're here to teach your child how to fit in to the world. And if they don't know how to function at a family dinner or have you seen that? You prop them up with a DVD player in a restaurant so the mom and dad can have a nice
mm-hmm.
dinner and the kid's out, occupied and out of their
yeah.
hair. But I feel like nobody's going to win in the end with that situation.
No, it's a lose-lose proposition, and what happens is those kids grow up and go into the workforce and have very few social skills. And I get that mm-hmm. from a lot of employers today. Customer
yeah.
service is out the window, you know, because you have to retrain at a core value and belief level that people are important and that you interact with the people who are walking through the door. So, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and in business coaching, we do see that a lot. I think at least based on the feedback that I get from clients all over the world, one of the key ingredients for me in a coaching relationship with me is that you are heard and listened to. And I listen at a depth, and I help other people learn to listen at a depth that is beyond merely auditory, but listens at a level that is – can I say spiritual, in
mm-hmm.
which I'm convinced that your customer and you're calling on people. I've worked with a lot of sales professionals. When you're listening to other people, they will tell you everything you need to know to help meet their needs, solve their problem, help them overcome the challenges. And that can be everything from buying a new vehicle to buying a life insurance policy. So when you ask questions, listen, and follow up with insightful questions. They'll tell you everything you need to know to help them.
Do you think our listening
and of course,
skills are on the decline?
yeah, but that's a marvelous opportunity for people like you and me who can help.
I was just going to say
attention.
That. I'm thinking that there's a bigger need for your business coaching more than ever. And I hate to say younger people, but people come into the workforce who – you know, there was a problem with a lot of kids. When my kids were teenagers, they didn't want to learn to drive because they didn't need to drive. They could interact on Facebook. They could interact on Snapchat
yeah.
or Twitter. So why should they take their time to get behind the wheel of a car and learn to drive and go somewhere because they didn't need to? But you're right. Now they're
Absolutely.
Getting out into the workforce, and they need those skills. So, Dr. Joey Fawcett, this is life is probably getting better for you right now. People need you.
Well, it certainly creates a great environment in which we can make a substantial, successful difference for people. And that's what I live to do because I follow Zig Ziglar's axiom about when you help other people get everything they want, you get everything you want. So that's my lifestyle. That's my work-positive
right.
lifestyle. But
right.
you're exactly right, and that's what pushed us. It became a capacity issue. That's what pushed me into providing online video coaching because it was just a capacity issue. I could only be on the phone with so many people at a time. And so we created videos, and that's what you get with 7 weeks to work positive. You get a video a week and activity guides and tools that you download, MP3s that you have that you listen to, so that we could reach a lot more people.
So people can, like, show them to whole companies, get them in the conference room, and they can watch your video once a week, and that's how that works?
Exactly. And with the Work Positive Master Coaching Program, we actually train leaders in how to lead teams, which is another huge
mm-hmm.
thing, particularly with business owners because they're so busy minding the store, if you will, that they're not sure how to lead these employees they've got. So what we do there is you get a 5-minute video each week about a work positive lifestyle core practice and how to live into that. For instance, I'm working on July's now. I don't know when you're, when you listener are listening to this, but anyway, I'm working on July of 2014, and it's about how to lead positive in a negative world. So we're talking about how to lead in a world of mutiny, how to lead positive in an anxious world, in a short-sighted world, in a fearful world. Because that's what happens is these customers come in and they bring their fears and their anxiety and their short-sightedness. And so how do you deal with that? And so you watch that five-minute video. The leader gives out a handout. The team talks about it. The leader gets about a 30-minute podcast from me each month. Okay, here's where we're going. Here's what we're going to do. Here's how you're going to lead your team this month to work positive. And so it's a wonderful resource to help, particularly business owners, but really team leaders of any kind, to do exactly what we're talking about here.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Now, Dr. Joey Fawcett has come up. We got sidetracked here, but that's okay. The five core practices, and number three is believe.
Right.
How does that work?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Yeah, this is really, you know, the first one, perceive, is your mental engagement. The second one is conceive, that's your social dynamic. And the third one, believe, is about your emotional engagement. What happens is we soak in this negative world so much that we begin to lose sight of the possibilities that are before us at work and, frankly, in at home and in other places too, but our focus is on work. So we let the world tell us what our level of success will be, and emotionally we buy the lie. Okay, I'm just doing good to do this. I'm just doing good to do that. And what happens is our self-esteem lowers, our self-confidence lowers, and we just want to stay in a tight little niche box and without really growing personally or professionally, growing our business if we're a salesperson or if we're a business owner, growing our team. In fact, I sat with a man who leads a multi-million dollar business recently. And he said to me, I think the worst thing I've done for my company is to push my people as hard as I could without investing in them. And so that's what I was there to do, is to help invest in his people. When you don't, then the negative world begins to take over and people become worker bees or drones, and so their heads are down. They're not emotionally engaged with their work. Look at any survey, Lisa, of American workers today. You're going to find the numbers are anywhere from 2/3 to 3/4 say they're dissatisfied or very dissatisfied at work. Well, think about how many hours you spend at work each day. You spend, some of us, more hours at work than we are asleep.
Right.
Mm-hmm. If you're very dissatisfied in that environment, why? A buddy of mine, Mark C. Crowley, wrote a book, Lead from the Heart. Great, great book. And in there, he talks about this very issue of employee engagement, how to lead in such a way that you engage the heart of your people. And so that's a lot of what the Believe Core practice is about.
Do you find there are a lot of companies who want to engage the hearts of their workforce? It seems like we keep hearing about how all the CEOs and the top corporate leaders are the ones making all the money, and they're paying the workers less and less. So I'm encouraged to hear that there are companies who do care about their employees and how they feel.
Well, and what you just said to me is a direct report from Push Media.
Right. Okay. You heard it, yes. Yep, I'm in the battlefield and coming to you
exactly.
Live. And that's
right.
For those of us who love radio, and you started out in, didn't you pay your way through college working in radio?
Yeah, oh, I did. I started out as a 16, 17-year-old in radio. Yep.
Right. So, I mean, it's like a thing. You just love it, and it's part of who you are, and it's sad to see what's happening. But I don't want to be bitter. I don't want to be an Eeyore about that right now. But you mentioned something
right.
about confidence. But, I mean, lack of confidence. How, is that genetic? Can you overcome that? That seems like a major task a lot of people need to work on.
It is. Let me jump back to your earlier statement about the companies and CEO pay and things like that. Again, that's the Push Media's negativity. If it bleeds, it leads. Mm-hmm. And so they spotlight those companies where that's the case and try to create an antagonistic relationship between, at least in the minds of some, between CEOs and employees. But yes, to answer your question, there are many, many, many companies that care for their employees. There's a best workplaces list. Go to that and look at it. The companies are getting it. And Mark, that I referenced earlier, my friend Mark, is really out there pushing it. In fact, he stepped out of the corporate world because there was very little employee engagement and care for employees. But now I think there's a whole movement beginning to realize that. And the millennial generation is demanding that. The best talent is going not just where the money is, but where they're cared for as individuals and where they can find a community of people who are passionate about their work and engaged. Therefore, they find meaning, purpose, satisfaction, happiness, and things like that from their 8 to 10 or 12 hours a day at work. And so it's huge, I think.
Now, I think one of those companies here in the I was just going to give Quicken Loans a shout out because they're in Detroit, and I think that they put a lot of effort into, you know, making the employees happy. But yeah, let's go back to lack of confidence.
Oh, well, just to piggyback on that, I was on a plane a few months ago with an Intuit, of course, Intuit has Quicken, with an Intuit VP, and he said the very same thing. So I'm encouraged. And when you remember that about 70 to 80% of all jobs in this country are related to small businesses, and, of course, that's somebody with 100 employees or fewer. Well, the definition changes, but it's easier to care for people like that in a smaller environment like that, I think. And so when you start thinking about the ma-and-pa hardware store on Main Street, you know, sure, they care for their employees. And so I think the – well, again, it's push media and it's a negative spotlight. So I think the contrarian view is true. Anyway, back to self-confidence. When you believe in your work and you are focusing your emotional energy on how you can make your unique contribution, one of the keys is to work with a company with whom you share core values. And so those things you hold near and dear to your heart, as well as a company with whom you share priorities. And employee engagement obviously would need to be one of those for you, Lisa, and for me as well. So you want to make sure there's that alignment of core values, that alignment of priorities, so that when you make your unique contribution to the corporate mission and vision, you are indeed satisfied with where you are. And when you begin to experience that satisfaction and you feel like what I'm doing makes a difference, when you know that and you feel that, then you begin to believe in yourself, in your work, and that's when your self-confidence soars. Now, it begins a one win at a time. You do one thing that produces an outcome that works for you, and it just draws you in more and more with your emotional engagement. So that's when your self-confidence rises, and that's when you have the privilege of going to work for the company that you work for, and you're telling all your friends about how great your workplace is.
Huh, some people are just happy to have a job. That sounds like the dream. The dream
I
situation.
Know. I actually received an email.
About what if you work in a situation and your boss treats you with a lack of respect, but you're younger and the boss is older and you're trying to learn from them, but they don't seem to respect you, do you have a right to speak up for yourself, or how would you handle that?
Well, the bottom line with respect is that you teach other people how to treat you.
Right.
And if you're tolerating an attitude or behavior from a boss, I get it that the boss has to be satisfied at a certain level in order for you to keep the job, but you're teaching the boss how to respect you or to disrespect you. And so first seek to understand that boss. I'm convinced you can learn from anyone. There's a handle to be grabbed even from Eeyore vampires. If nothing else, you learn how you're not going to be when you're a boss.
Right.
And you focus on those positive things. Also, here's what I'm learning from my boss. But remember, by tolerating certain behaviors, you're teaching your boss how to respect you or disrespect you.
Mm-hmm. I got I got the feeling from this listener email, lisaloveberry@gmail.com, that this is a younger person and the boss is an older person sort of set in his ways and he can't just quit. So how does a younger person teach an older person set in their ways, you can't treat me that way? I'm adding to the email
Great.
Now, but I'm,
yep.
that's the feeling I got.
No, I get that. What happens with some of us is, and Carol Dweck has written about this far more extensively than I have time to talk about today. Well, there are two kinds of mindsets. There's a fixed mindset and a growth mindset. By the way, my friend Sean Aker in the Happiness Advantage does a great
him.
Job of him. Oh,
love
he
him.
Is wonderful.
He's going to be on Oprah
he does
next
great...
weekend.
Oh, I know. I think I think I saw where it's going to be two, what are they
yeah.
called, Soulful Sunday or something like that?
Rare,
two episodes.
Soul, yeah, right.
Yeah, he's absolutely wonderful. He does a great job in the Happiness Advantage of taking Carol Dweck's work and unpacking that for you so that you understand fixed mindset and growth mindset. And what happens is for some of us, particularly if we've been in a career for 30 years or more, we begin to develop that fixed mindset where we're not really interested in growing, or the pace of change, and this goes back to the perceived core practice, the pace of change is outpacing our desire to move from the familiar to the unfamiliar. So it's not that the middle-aged boss don't want to learn. It's just that his capacity or her capacity to learn as rapidly as it once did has probably moved more into the fixed mindset rather than the growth mindset. Because what happens in your brain is you got certain familiar thoughts, and when ideas come to your mind, your brain's rather lazy or it's super efficient, depending on how you want to look at it. And so it wants to take that idea and put it in a mental file folder. And so when an unfamiliar idea shows up, it bounces around in your head. You're not sure where to put it. So your initial reaction may be to call it is a negative one and just to flush it, to get rid of it. When in fact, you need to find a way to do the hard mental work of creating a new file folder. So this younger person may be threatening to the middle-aged person who has that fixed mindset because the younger person is in a growth mindset place and is embracing the unfamiliar. The way I like to describe that, Lisa, is to talk about it's not that the old dog can't learn new tricks. It's that he's got to unlearn the old tricks first. And that's a real challenge for some of us. So I guess being patient with the boss, finding those places where you have a skill set, where you've embraced something that was unfamiliar to you a little bit faster than the boss, and then building a bridge between the unfamiliar and the familiar. Hey, boss, you know, here's what we were trying to do, and there's a core mission there that you were trying to accomplish, and so it may be a new way of doing that. And so you patiently introduce that new way of doing that, and hopefully you'll find that you won't be dismissed as quickly or disrespected as quickly. Does that make sense?
Well, I liked where you were going with the boss feeling threatened, and I think that happens a lot, and I think that's when we're having your own sense of self and your own confidence and your own, you know, no one else can chip away at you. In fact, you had a great tweet yesterday. I think you were, and I don't know if you do, you were quoting Leo Biscaglia, "Don't walk in my head with your dirty feet." I love that. Don't walk in your head with my dirty feet.
That's right. He's one of my favorites. I loved him.
Yeah.
I wish he were still with us so we could get more great
quotes.
Exactly. But then, you know, who do you give an opportunity to walk in your head? So what I'm trying to do is move the conversation to where the younger person is somewhat understanding of what's threatening to the fixed mindset of the boss, and then finding ways to build a bridge between what's unfamiliar to the boss and what's familiar to the boss. And that's the true genius of helping that boss move forward out of that fixed mindset. Now, I mean, if he's entrenched, then you have a decision to make. You know, you learn what you can, and you begin, you plow that into your next search for a position, you know, that you want to give expression to your unique contribution. What kind of boss do I want to, who am I going to direct report to, and what am I looking for?
It's a good learning experience.
Oh, it's every day.
Yeah.
It's every day.
All right, we got two
way.
More five core practices to get through. The next one is achieve.
Okay.
Dr.
This
Joey
is a
Fawcett.
Physical
what
dynamic.
Is...
Yeah, you perceive it mentally, you conceive it socially, you believe it emotionally, and then those are really, well, they're somewhat external with conceive, but those are primarily internal functions. So when you get to the physical dynamic of achieve, that's when you act. And it's action that brings results. And that's what you're after. So you begin to focus on the positive. You begin to focus on positive people and positive thoughts. So you're giving your attention to what's most important. Then you want to couple your attention with your intention. And my intention really has to do with the Believe Core practice. These are my emotional intentions. These are the things I intend to do. But as I write about in our Work Positive in a Negative World book, intention divorced from attention is the road to nowhere. Because I can intend to
do all
sorts of
stuff.
Say that
again, so we make sure we got that. What did you just say?
Yeah,
say that.
Sure. Intention is the road to nowhere. When it's divorced from attention and from action, intention in and of itself is the road to nowhere. It's catalytic, but it's not what produces the results. I'm giving you my achievement prescription here
okay.
that comes right out of that core practice. So it's attention. I pay attention to positive thoughts and positive people. That's perceive and conceive.
Mm-hmm.
Plus intention. Okay, now this is the Believe core practice. So I'm hooking it up with the positive statements, the self-confidence, the self-esteem, and things like that, my intentions. Okay, so it's attention plus intention plus action. That's when it counts, when you act on it. You go and do something. Lots of people have wonderful shower ideas every morning, but it's the person who steps out of the shower, dries off,
right.
and goes and does something that brings the results. Okay? So it's got to be
right.
action.
How do we get ourselves to get going? Do we have to inspire ourselves or read your book? Or how do we – it seems like you're right. Everybody has a great idea, but so few people actually act on it.
Wow. Well,
how can you inspire us to...
That was a fat pitch right over the heart of the plate.
There you go.
Hey,
I threw you a softball. Good job. Right.
Then you want to do the coaching programs with us.
Right.
You're asking for that one. Yeah. It's that achievement prescription. Because, you see, by the time you've perceived it, you see the critical mass, the movement that you're creating internally that then takes on external manifestation. You're already focusing mentally on the positive, and you're filtering out the negative. You're conceiving the positive because you've kicked the ER vampires to the curb, and now your high-five team, as I like to call it, those five positive people around you, you've upped your average through the roof right there, right? And since you're with positive thoughts and positive people, then you now believe that a tiny acorn can become a 100-foot oak tree. Okay, you willingly suspended your disbelief that the negative world would give you, and you've tapped into what Napoleon Hill referred to as your creative imagination. And so now you're off to the races. You created an internal movement that has to take on physical expression now. And so you act and you do something, okay? And you create that short-term win. You get some results. It's high impact. You learn from the results, you get your feedback, and you persevere. And so you just keep doing things. And it's amazing how it works. Absolutely amazing. But it is a process because you perceive it, conceive it, believe it, then you achieve it. Most of us just want the silver bullet and we want to get a right to achieve. Tell me what to do.
Right.
Well, what you do is you focus on the positive and filter out the negative. You keep your high-five team high, and you believe.
Well, and you said two key words there, I thought, act and do. Are you big on envisioning and feeling yourself accomplishing what you want to accomplish?
Oh, yeah, so that it draws you. In fact,
right.
in the Perceive Core practice, we actually talk about taking 10 minutes in the morning, 5 minutes in which you read inspirational literature or material or listen to positive music, and then the other 5 minutes you spend with your appointment calendar for the day envisioning positive outcomes to each of those activities that you have scheduled. Because when you set that, then you're emotionally buying into it, but you still have to go do it. Okay.
All right, I'm going to play the cynic here for a minute and go, come on, it's not that easy. You don't just get up and read it and envision it. Does it really work? That was me being a cynic.
Sure. Well, of course, and I get that all the time, so don't think you're the first to say that. Well,
right, I'm not saying
I'm
playing that. I believe you.
Oh, no. I understand, Lisa. How is it working with what you're doing now? Are you
achieving
your goals?
Dr. Phil would say, how's that working for you?
Yeah, right. My buddy Tim Sanders likes to say something like, And Tim's written all sorts of wonderful books, The Likeability Factor, and all sorts of marvelous books. Tim says, what are you not doing, if you're not getting the results you want, what are you not doing now that you were doing when things were going better for you? When you start thinking
about
that.
That's a good one.
That,
yeah, that is a good
you know,
one.
That's, if it's not working out for you watching TV in the mornings now, then don't do that. And just try for, say, 21 days, 3 weeks, spending 10 minutes in the morning, 5 minutes with positive literature, positive music, 5 minutes looking through your calendar for the day and seeing positive outcomes before you get started that day. Just see what happens, just as a comparison contrast.
And we can achieve, I think we live in an ageist society. I think that's something that I'm coming up against. I was working with some people one time, and they were talking, and they said, oh, she's 38, and she went to the club. And I thought, they think 38 is old. Like, and then to all the people who think when you're 50, they're done with you. And I want to say, what do you think you're going to do when you're 50? So,
yeah.
You know, you gave us
well,
the Colonel Sanders.
The era where, yeah, that's right, Colonel Sanders. There's seasons to life. And but look, I grew up in the 60s when we said things like don't trust anybody over 30. So, yeah, that's a generational distinction. Age is really irrelevant for me. The cool thing about living as long as I have is that I've accumulated some experience, which means I screwed up a whole bunch. So now I learned what not to do, which pushed me towards what to do. And so I get to do more of what works. And that smells like wisdom to a lot of people. So I like that.
Does it? Do you think people are buying age and wisdom? Or I mean, I know Oprah just turned 60 and people still find her inspirational, but I don't know. I just feel like it's all about the young celebrities and I don't know, is wisdom valued in our society these days?
Hey, Lisa, you're buying the push media's negativity again when you ask that question.
No, I'm not. No. I'm not buying it at all.
They're selling it every day. Well, it's that hyper-focus on, you know, youth and things like that. But that's the way it's always been. I mean, my parents thought Elvis was taking our generation to hell in a handbasket. So, I mean, we made it this far. And Elvis didn't, but we made it this far. So. Age is truly irrelevant. I have a choice every day to pay attention to what I want to pay attention to. I want to perceive it, conceive it, believe it, achieve it. And then I want to realize that fifth core practice, I received it. And that's the core practice that really surprised me when I was investigating Carnegie and Sanders and Hewlett-Packard and others out of the Great Depression, these Great Depression gurus, as I like to call them. They discovered that you truly do reap what you sow. And truly what goes around comes around. And so they began to do things like investing in their employees and engaging them in a whole new way. They began to say thank you to their customers and clients, their teammates, to their suppliers and vendors for taking such good care of the business. They began to squeeze themselves dry, that is, recognizing that their business and themselves are like sponges. You know, you can put a sponge under a water tap for a few minutes. Pretty soon it fills up. Well, if you can leave it under there for 3 minutes and it's going to hold the same amount of water as if you leave it under there for 3 days. It's when you squeeze it out that it takes on more water. So they began to see themselves as conduits, okay, for positivity. And so they would invest philanthropically into their communities. Harlan Sanders was a huge philanthropist. And I think you find lots of other people have done what Bob Buford refers to as moving from success to significance. And that's important. I mean, Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, Zuck from Facebook, all these billionaires are now finding themselves at a place where they're challenging each other to give in ways that make a difference. My friend, Dr. Ivan Meisner, the founder of BNI, talks about giver's gain. That is back to Zig Ziglar's statement. When I help somebody else get everything they want, I get everything I want. So that receive core practice is huge, I think. When we discover ways to serve one another, well, just like me giving you an hour of time today, you giving me an invitation to be on your show, we're serving each other. And some good's got to come out of that. And that's what keeps the flywheel of positivity turning. Because when you start reaping what you're sowing and you realize what goes around comes around, you suddenly acquire a desire to intentionally plant good seed.
We're both purveyors of
grow.
Purveyors of positivity. Dr.
Right.
Joey Fawcett, thank
right.
you so much. The name of the book is Work, the latest book, because you have a whole bunch of them, but the latest one is Work Positive in a Negative World. And again, if someone wants to contact you, what's your website or how can they get a hold of you?
Sure. It's 1-877-4-DR-JOEY on the telephone. And it's listentolife.org at the website. And the email is drjoey, D-R-J-O-E-Y, at listentolife.org.
Dr. Joey Fawcett, I cannot thank you enough for joining me today. It's been an inspiration, and thank you to everyone for listening. If you'd like to email me, it's lisaloveberry, B-A-R-R-Y, at gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter, Lisa_Berry, and I look forward to connecting with you at this same time next week.